What's good, everyone? My name is Jacob Moses, community builder at Strongtowns, and welcome to It's Little Things, a Strongtowns podcast where in each episode, we focus on a different action that you, the concerned citizen, the elected official, the city planner, can take to make your town stronger. This episode's action, creating people-oriented places. Think about the places in your city or town that you most enjoy visiting. Several places likely come to mind, such as your downtown, your main street, or your local park. You enjoy visiting these places for a reason. Unlike the sea of parking lots you must traverse to patron a big box store on the edge of town, or the narrow sidewalks you must navigate along a high-speed road, at these places, you feel like you belong. That's because, as you'll learn in this episode, these places are people-oriented, a term you've likely heard used to describe places where people, whether they're on foot, bike, wheelchair, push scooter, whatever, feel prioritized. To help us dig deeper into people-oriented places and how you can advocate for them in your own community, we have Carrie Wester back on the podcast, Strongtowns member and founder of Bothalites for People-Oriented Places, better known as BOPOP. Since late 2018, BOPOP has educated residents of Bothell about how the city can create people-oriented places, such as advocating for responsible, financially solvent land use, modeling positive civic engagement, and supporting community leaders in moving good projects forward. In this episode, Carrie shares how you can create people-oriented places in your own community, including how to educate people about people-oriented places, how these places create more financially resilient places, and how you can demonstrate that vision in your own community. Enjoy. Hey there, Carrie. How are you today?
Hi, Jacob. Doing well. Thank you.
So happy to have you on the podcast, friend. How's life in Bothell?
It's going well. We're busy and doing great things.
Very good. Well, Carrie, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today. We have a great action to discuss together, and that is advocating for people-oriented places.
That's right.
And Carrie, I know this is your bread and butter as we're going to dive more into today. You run an excellent organization out of Bothell, Washington, called BOPOP, also known as Bothalites for People-Oriented Places.
You got it.
So, Carrie, before we dive into all the great insights I'm sure you'll share with us today, I want to rewind to the pre-BOPOP days.
Sure.
I'd love to start with learning more about this organization. What were you observing in neighborhoods in Bothell that inspired you and your peers to start BOPOP?
Yeah, and a quick shout out. I've got to say thank you to Jenna Huber. I think I pronounced that correctly, down in Olympia. They created OPOP several years ago, and I asked her if I could co-op the name for Bothell BOPOP because it works so well for us because we have a popkini field. So anyway, I just want to say thank you, and the inspiration for the group, in fact, came from them as well. So they deserve kudos. So they're doing really good work down there, and I admire what they're doing. I knew what they were doing, but here in Bothell, I'm actually developing a small project, and we have gone through a lot of growth that has been planned by the community and city leaders since 2006. And there's a lot going on. A lot has gone, been built and changed, and roads changed and infrastructure improved, and new sidewalks and new buildings and all kinds of stuff. Bothell's being remade after a lot of planning. There's a very active 27,000 person strong Facebook group called Bothell Community. And there's always a lot of griping on there about, you know, how Bothell's changing because a lot of people don't like change. But there was always a few voices like mine on there saying, well, we like it and we're enjoying it and it's good for community. It's good for the environment. It's good for being close to things that are useful as things get built up. And there's a lot of reasons that, you know, we're cheerleading for this effort, not just because we love developers, but because we want a strong town. And so I thought, my people are out there. There's other people in Bothell. We're a suburb of Seattle, 50,000 people here almost. There's got to be other people like me, and I want to meet them. So I made a post a couple years ago on that page and said, I like what's going on, and if you like it too, just ping me or let me know your name, and later on maybe we'll start a group, and we'll talk about how we can facilitate talk about moving things forward in a way that we think are good. We can help the city make good decisions.
Did you get much of a response from pinging folk?
Yeah. So I ended up making a list back then, summer 2017, of about 25 or 30 people. I decided to start BOPOP, when I forgot the name and so forth, this last late fall, early winter. And I emailed all them, or I think I just tagged them on Facebook and said, hey, I'm finally starting that group. And of course, I had a bunch of new people as well who were interested in the idea. And then we set down about six new meetings through June. And I said, you know, I'd love to meet you. This is a group we're starting. We're going to start talking about kind of Bothell urbanism, that's with the Strong Towns focus. And I didn't have really an endorsement of Strong Towns, so I was kind of careful about making it a Strong Bothell or something like that. I just thought, well, I'll do something kind of like OPOP instead. So I got a pretty good response. The first meeting in early January, we had 10 or 12 people, I think. So
you guys have been at it for about 10, 11 months now?
Yeah. Since January. So there's all kinds of good work happening. We're getting that growth. But I felt like, although we did a form-based code down here for our downtown area so it could grow in a more urban way, and we've got some enlightened planners and so forth, our land use code is still very, very backward looking in a lot of ways. We still have these long crosswalks in the new streets we build, and sidewalks are getting better and so forth, but we haven't adopted a cottage code or really acknowledged the need for missing middle housing. And I see elderly folks who can't get across the crosswalks fast enough, and there's a lot of in our land use code that I see was lacking, and other people found that they agreed with me on a lot of those things. So just kind of a number of little things around town that really are big things that we thought we could start affecting some change if we started talking about.
So Carrie, we got the name BOPOP. The latter part, the POP, stands for people-oriented places. For folk who may be new to Strong Towns, new to this, you know, line of thinking of how we look at how we develop our cities and towns, how would you define this term, people-oriented places?
We all know them, but let's start with some simple ones. Your favorite park, your favorite coffee shop, place you meet people and hang out, it can be a community center. You know, traditionally, a people-oriented place was just your main street. And hopefully your main street was doing well enough that you would go down there regularly and see people you knew. And, you know, in Europe, it would be, you know, from walking around to the patisseries and the coffee shops and so forth. So places where people are naturally attracted to because they feel safe and they feel like they're going to find community there. So it can be a wide number of things. And I felt like the way we developed in the 20th century with a more suburban, auto-oriented culture did not foster that need to make people-oriented places. So I want to return back to that. And, you know, some people might call it new urbanist planning or, you know, Strong Towns principles, but we all have those places and people flock to them. They love them. So it can be just about any place that people end up gathering.
Listeners, Carrie used the example of downtown, perhaps as a place where people gather, an excellent example of a people-oriented place. And it's astonishing, you know, if we look at current zoning codes, like Carrie mentioned, oftentimes our most favorite places, our most favorite people-oriented places could not be rebuilt today. So, you know, it adds almost a sense of urgency and a mission to advocating for people-oriented places because we love them. We love visiting them on the weekends. We love taking our friends and families there when they visit. However, really, we can't rebuild these places most of the time.
We're not allowed to build more.
Yeah.
And if you are, it's just a huge effort. I mean, it's a huge lift. You got to like start a new town, for example, with Seabrook. I haven't visited Seabrook, which is about 3 hours from Seattle, finally. That's been underway for 15, 20 years, and it's a revelation. But, you know, they had to build a whole new town to reorient how people think about building towns and make community. So, yeah, and I've said that to some of our planners and city leaders and council members. I said, we really can't build our main street today. Mostly because everybody would be required to put a big parking lot between each building. What a shame. So that's another thing I'm working on is helping them change a paradigm and think about, well, when we extend our main street, because we have this big empty lot that this huge place you're going to redevelop. I said, you know, we should require it be developed in a certain way so that a shared parking lot can be used by all the businesses and we can build them nice and tight again and create a destination in Bothell.
And listeners, if you're new to this term, parking minimums that Carrie's referring to, this is a line of code that we see in many zoning codes across the country, small cities, big towns, where with any new developments, housing, commercial, whatever it may be, the zoning code requires the developer to build a certain amount of parking spots. So think about your downtown. You probably love it because of the lack of parking. You're able to park once and explore all the different shops. Today, you want to build that boutique shop. You want to build that candy store, whatever it is. We're talking maybe a couple dozen parking spots.
Yep. And that's another one of the things in your first question, what I observe around Bothell. I observe that we would see probably a entrepreneurial renaissance in downtown Bothell if we did not require all the people who want to start businesses to put in all the parking that's required. It literally is, besides impact fees, which we could also discuss, but the impact fees for like change of use along with parking minimums, they stifle an enormous amounts of potential business that would be people-oriented businesses and places in Bothell. And it just breaks my heart because we have the solutions, but we're not allowed to implement them.
I'm with you, Carrie. We see the potential. You know, maybe we have a thriving downtown with, you know, maybe a couple of vacant parking lots off downtown. And, you know, we can envision that new people-oriented place that could be developed, but really can't get there until we revisit parking minimums. And listeners, if you're interested, if you go to strongtowns.org/parking minimums, or maybe it's just /parking, I will confirm and put in the show notes. But you can see a list of several cities and towns across the country that have taken this great next step of removing parking minimums, or at least have made progress. So it's not too far-fetched of an idea. And once cities do take that leap, we do see a lot more productive development happening in those spaces.
And of course, I read tons about it, and I'm just, you know, beyond convinced. And I think that I know we would see, like I said, I don't use the word renaissance lightly, but I think we'd see a whole new shift in our downtown liveliness, vibrancy, that word is so often used, if we did repeal these parking minimums and people would still have plenty of places to park. And as you probably know, but listeners may not know, I'm an architect, so I walk around like and see that empty parking lot. It just kills me because I've already got a vision for that parking lot. If we could have at it.
Yeah, I'm with you, Carrie. Carrie, I want to shift to the great educational aspect of BOPOP. Whenever I checked out y'all's website last week, I was so impressed. I went to the goals page of the BOPOP website, and it had all this great education on if people are interested in creating more people-oriented places. This is the line of thinking that we should adopt to see more of them. I think a few great examples that I love that I have written here on my desk is that, hey, like if you're concerned about traffic and congestion, let's talk about building more complete neighborhoods. And listeners, that's a new term for you. A complete neighborhood is, think of it as a place where you can achieve most or all of the day's needs on foot or bike, just within your neighborhood. You don't have to, you know, hop in the whip and drive 5-10 miles to the edge of town. Carrie, whenever you created BOPOP and, you know, sent out those invites for folk to join the group, how important was educating them about what it actually means to create these places that we love?
I will tell you, I wrote in some of the questions we discussed that we might want to talk about today. I wrote education is everything for BOPOP, because when I was starting this group, I've got friends with the deputy mayor, who's a very enlightened person, and she's got a lot of great ideas. She's also an architect, so we like to talk, and I like her vision for the city, and she shares a lot of these ideas. But she said, oh, it's just so much education, because she's trying to do it all the time as well, and she's high energy. So I admire her greatly. But that's really been driven home to me the last 9 months doing the group, is not only did I have to help educate people who are really excited about the stuff and are eating it up as I explain it to them, because I'm kind of the one bringing the information, and then they, oh, we like that. But, you know, we're a tiny, tiny slice of the population. So I feel like our main job is really just to get these ideas out there in an accessible, palatable way and say, there is a different way. And we're also raised on auto-oriented culture, that people don't hardly know what to do with it, and they bristle often against it, or thinks it, you know, it's crazy talk. So education is really kind of our primary role. It's just to help people understand we could have nice things, as we like to joke about. We could have nice things. We could have a better Main Street. We could have fewer car pedestrian collisions. We could have better places to ride bikes. We could get everything from our complete neighborhoods if we were allowed to do these things. So our job one is to find accessible ways to get all these great ideas out that people will be interested in learning about them and not turn them off.
And Kerry, I love the way that you present this education material too, because, you know, it avoids certitude, which I think anyone who's really enthusiastic about a subject, you know, it's like whether it's removing parking minimums or creating more complete neighborhoods, like we're so enthusiastic about it that sometimes we're maybe quick to think like this is the only right way and we need everyone to buy in right away. But how you laid out these questions, and I wish I would have had them, you know, if I flash back 2 years before I joined Strongtowns, like I loved people-oriented places. I love complete neighborhoods. But it just kind of stopped there, Kerry. I hesitated to dig into the weeds. But it would have been great if, you know, there's an organization like BOPOP where like, hey, you love your downtown, you love this park, you love this people-oriented place. This is how we make it happen. I know it might be intimidating to talk about parking minimums against the zoning code, but let's work together and at least embrace this alternative and have a discussion about it.
That's right. And I think people aren't aware that they can affect change. And I know we see this in social justice and all kinds of things. So if we decide we're going to go in a certain direction and we all make our case at city council meetings and so forth, I see that's how change happens, at least in my town and most towns, helping people understand like you can have these things if you like them. Like there are several towns nearby that people like to go visit. We like to go to Edmonds, Washington, which is on the water, and they have a really nice intact early 20th century downtown, and Kirkland, which is nearby, and Bothell's got less of it, but we have a little bit of that here. But you know, as Wes Craiglow says in his TED talk about the productivity of compact urban places, you know, think about the places we go on vacation, Barcelona and Paris and New York City and so forth. No one's going to vacation in the suburbs. So like you alluded to, we all love these places. We know we love them. And so we're just saying, you do love them. So we're just going to open your eyes to the fact that we can ask for more. It's another way to bring these about.
That's exactly right. Karen, your experience from running BOPOP, you and your peers, where have you noticed that people sometimes struggle to grasp these concepts? I imagine, you know, they're interested in the group because they love people-oriented places, but perhaps there's just some elements of it where they struggle to understand. Where have you noticed that people have some voids in their knowledge?
The first and most obvious one is just the idea that we don't need as much parking as people think. So that's kind of a low-hanging fruit, right? But a really hard lift for our culture. And then I think related to that is just we are so indoctrinated and saturated in the idea that cars come first. Everything's designed to the car scale. And, you know, look how angry people get if pedestrian takes too long walking across the street and you're in your car and you're mad, whatever. I know we try not to be that way now because we have a different understanding, but you know, it's, we have kind of been programmed to think that way by the way our cultures and our society is laid out. So again, it's that sort of idea of shifting a paradigm and saying, you may struggle with this, but we actually want to make your life easier and better and cheaper to live. And so that's a heavy lift is to get people to struggle through that and think there might be another way. And as an aside, like related to that, there were even folks who came to the meetings and they were there. So they were willing and interested in this topic, these subjects. And I played all the, we did a video night. And I did all the curbside chat videos, which is a total of about 15 minutes, and a few others about parking and exclusionary zoning. And people were just fired up as soon as they saw how, you know, unjust some of these things were. And of course, you know, they're biased. There are these videos I showed them that said we can have a different way. They use the Socratic method a little bit, you know, like, What do you think of this? What do you think of this? And so it doesn't shove it down your throat as much as sort of propose like, hey, it could be different. And I feel like if I could get those videos and those ideas and certain books in people's hands, we might really start to make more of the change we'd like to see. Because, again, those people were a selected audience, but they might, you know, if some people were a little skeptical about, I don't know, reduced parking, it seems like we need more parking. Now they see these videos and go, wow. Things could be so much better if we didn't require all that parking. So it really changes minds dramatically. So that's probably the biggest struggle right now is just helping them understand that we could have a better way I think it's a better way of living.
So Carrie, I imagine, like you said, it would be challenging to convince someone day one that perhaps we don't need as much parking as we have. Then again, maybe we just wait for a Black Friday parking events and we can show them otherwise. But I imagine in the meantime, you know, there's some low lifts that groups like Boat Pop can take to demonstrate this vision and help kind of spur people's imagination as we introduce these educational materials. Has Boat Pop had any success helping demonstrate this vision actually in the community and, you know, pointing a concept that they may have learned through the curbside chat or through another video to actually what's going down in Bothell?
We are trying to get traction on that now. We've our last few months have been talking as a group about what projects are we going to take on. You know, this group is more than just talking about what we wish we had and stuff like that. But the goal from day one has been to galvanize us around some ideas and then go actually, frankly, the work on the ground is go talk at council meetings, planning commission meetings and so forth, and ask for the things we want and demonstrate why we think there would be a better way of thinking about issues and problems in a Bothell. So that's how change is often affected around here. And so one thing we've settled on that we're going to do is the farmer's market needs to be restarted. It had to move from its location. A couple of members of BOPOP were involved with trying to bring it back this year. And they really struggled with location. And it's in a location where it's really not taking off because it's not in downtown. It's a couple miles from downtown. So in a nutshell, a bunch of us decided, well, this would be what's a classic people-oriented place? It's a farmer's market market. And so we are starting to talk about trying to bring back an enhanced and robust farmer's market that we would help affect, you know, bring about this next year as a helper in this effort and make it even better than before. And key thing is we have this beautiful plaza outside City Hall that was just built a few years ago, and it really hasn't been used for much. And it's in the center of town. It could be that place people gather that Strongtown's asked about in their 10 questions. It should be. And it's just not used much. And so we would like to have it there because we think if it was there weekly and that we were helping that become a classic weekly people-oriented place where people could come together and to have commerce and community, that would be a positive, thing that BOPOP could bring to the community. And it would be a place for us to start instead of trying to do some of these harder lifts. So we're going to start with that. And maybe that would help give us some credibility, shall I say, within Bothell as well. So that's one of the ones we're going to start working on, as well as several of us go to council meetings and planning commission meetings regularly and just speak at public hearings about public open space and development requirements. And so we're often doing kind of on the ground, nitty gritty things that help move the needle in small ways as well.
Carrie, going back to the farmer's market idea, what a great way for BOPOP to demonstrate its vision. You know, we're providing fresh fruits and vegetables. We're fostering entrepreneurship. Get this, all without building any additional parking.
That's right. And it's actually, get this, the plaza is over the parking garage that the city built that it's free to use. So like, okay, people can't push back on the parking because it's right there. Not that there isn't plenty in town. There is, but like, well, the market's on top of the free parking garage.
That's right.
So, the city's been a little recalcitrant when they asked when the former farmers market asked to be there, and it really looks just like it's designed to have a farmers market. It's amazing, and there's just some small hurdles, and I think they didn't push hard enough. And there was one council member on the farmers market currently that was maybe could be gumming up the works a little bit. I'm not sure, so we might work on it without that person this time.
Well, Carrie, we look forward to following y'all's progress.
Thank you. Yeah. We hope to have some progress with that.
Very good. Carrie, I want to take a shift to the conversation of financial resiliency. You know, this is our core message at Strongtowns is that, you know, yes, while we're building people-oriented places that people love, what we end up finding is that it's more financially productive for cities and towns as well. It generates more tax revenue per acre and overall just a considerably better use of land, which is a finite resource for us. Going back to education, where did this financial resiliency topic come into play in helping people understand the financial aspect of advocating for more people-oriented places?
That was one we really delved into the video night when we watched the curbside chat series, because And I've also been, as an aside, been encouraging people to read Walkable City by Jeff Speck, which is, I think, just, you know, can change minds tremendously if people read that. And the financial aspect is woven into so many of the ideas that Jeff talks about in Strong Towns as well. And so one of the things I've been, gently hammering, I guess, is on is we, you know, Bothell's like every city. It's always short of cash. It probably shouldn't be. I mean, we're in the land of Amazon and Microsoft and all these huge companies, and everybody works for them around here. And so we really shouldn't be short on cash. And it's because, you know, we're doing this kind of unsustainable development onto the hinterlands, and we're not allowing infill to happen, finer grain urbanism, you know, missing middle housing and so forth, as well as we need to allow out more business districts to pop up like they would have in the old days. So I've been trying to get that message to our city manager and to others, say, we have ideas to help you be more fiscally fit and financially strong by, you know, maybe a few tweaks of the zoning code and what you allow throughout the city. And we can actually help with this. And, wouldn't you like that? Wouldn't you like to have enough money? And wouldn't you like to get more out of what we have already? Wouldn't you like to get more out of what's in the street, the infrastructure? So that's the message I've kind of been delivering and that I learned from Strong Towns, which is, I mean, I'm extremely interested in that. That's really, like you said, the bottom line, the core message of Strong Towns. And that's what we all want. We want what money we do raise and use to be really used effectively. And I see these now, I can't walk down a block without thinking, could we do more with all those pipes and wires in the ground?
That vacant lot right there.
And I can't help but think about it that way. And again, it's like funny enough, when I came in to do this, I was outside chatting with, because I'm building a building 20 feet outside my window here, my own little mixed use fourplex. And so and I'm the general contractor as well as the architect and developer. And so that's one of the ways I got in Strong Towns actually, is becoming an architect as a developer. But we were just discussing all the things that are in the ground that I put in the ground and where they go and what crisscrosses what. And I know that I personally have paid the costs associated with that. So I can't help but drive around Bothell and ride my bike and walk around Bothell and do all those things and think about all this infrastructure that could be working harder for us each block. So I'm trying to I feel like it's a whole paradigm shift in thinking. Like, oh my gosh, we could, I call it supercharging. We could supercharge our established areas of Bothell if we thought about it this way. You know, I'll be a little bit negative here. Maybe a handful of people come out and some folks might call them NIMBYs. No, you can't do that. You can't do that. And council's very responsive to that. And I appreciate that about the council, that they're responsive to people's wishes and desires and everything. But that's why I'm trying to get people out to counter that message and say, well, we want cottage courts and we want more fine-grained urbanism, and we want complete communities. We want people to advocate for those things so that we get heard as well.
And listeners, if you're new to this conversation of financial resiliency and how it relates to creating more people-oriented places, you know, this isn't a top-down approach. Like as we always talk as Strong Towns, it's all about incrementalism. If we want to try to generate more tax revenue for the city, what small things can we tweak today to see if they work and then iterate from there? And Kerry gave the great example of, hey, if we just eliminated parking minimums, that would be a great first step. If we permitted backyard cottages, or also known as accessory dwelling units, that's a great next step to increase housing stock. So as you're hearing this, don't get too intimidated thinking that we have to just rewrite everything and just completely change what our cities are like. There are little things we can do to become more financially resilient places.
And kudos to Bothell. We have a pretty good ADU code. I'm still trying to get the owner living on site requirement omitted, but we have continued to improve our ADU code. So kudos to Bothell on that. For looking forward, it's still a little conservative, but you know, baby steps sometimes.
That's right, making progress.
We've had that on the books for years. That's good.
This has been an absolute joy. You shared some excellent insights. So impressed with work at Bopop.
Thanks. It's fun.
And listeners, if you want to dig in more, we'll include in the show notes a link to their website. And again, I really encourage you to check out, in particular, and we'll include this in the show notes as well, the goals page. It's just an excellent example of how we can, you know, gently nudge people to educate themselves on how to rethink how our cities are built. And then also the reading list page. As you educate yourself on what it means to create people-oriented places, Karen and his peers do an excellent job of giving you some additional reading material. You'll find some more Strong Town stuff, maybe some Jeff Speck stuff, some other great materials to supplement the knowledge. So a few excellent resources that I'll include in the show notes. Kerry, thank you. This has been so much fun.
This has been a joy for me. Thank you so much for thinking about us.
And we'll see you, I suppose, early next week. Is that right? For one of the very first stops of the Strong America Tour.
That's right. Myself and Hugh Geenan, another Strong Towns member, put together the Seattle visit. And then I actually am connected to the Kenmore visit that night as well, because I used to live there and I know the city manager. So and they're very, very close to us, right down the street. So I'll be at both those.
I love it. And listeners, if you're interested in learning more about the Strong America Tour and maybe seeing if we're going to have a stop in your town, check out strongtowns.org/Strong America Tour. Kerry, thank you. This has been fun. We'll chat soon.
Thank you, Jacob. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. If you're enjoying the content, please subscribe to It's the Little Things on iTunes, and we will chat next week. See ya.